Scaling ideas and principles. Now we're going for it. Sorry about that slight delay. And I'm going to get a bit quicker here. So it's very easy to build something and put it on the web. This is really, really easy. And this is why I became a web developer. I love that. I worked at a radio station as a newscaster. And I hated it that people have to spend money to be on radio or to commit a crime. That's the only way you can get on radio. But on the internet, you just went to GeoCities or some other cheap provider and built a website. And all of a sudden, you could reach millions of people worldwide. And it's great. Making them work for a lot of people is much, much harder. So first of all, like giving them in different languages. Second of all, making them available for 10,000 hits an hour. So you can do, however, a few things to prepare yourself for the future. Because thinking ahead is very important what you do, because you don't want to be offline. On that day of success, when TechCrunch talks about you, you don't want to go down. You have to do something against that. The first thing to remember is to delegate to experts. You don't do everything yourself. It's just amazing how many people think they can build their own website, maintain their server, maintain their data backups, and then still have a successful company. This is not necessary anymore. So here's a great example from Facebook. So you have Carla here, and she was very excited that Pinky is driving in 47 minutes ago. And then half an hour ago, Carla was actually in an accident, which is not surprising because actually Pinky is not a good driver. And probably Carla shouldn't have a driving license either. But the main point is that you don't want, if you want to scale to your pinkness, you don't want to be Pinky. You don't want to be a person that does something that you shouldn't be doing. You don't want to think about buying new server hardware. You don't want to think about connecting if the energy is there on your computer or if it crashes down. I've been at this company in Los Angeles. They asked me if I want to host something with them. And I'm like, okay, so where's your backup? What if the power grid goes down here? Do you have another server farm in another building? Yeah, opposite, on the other side of the road. So they were on the same power grid, and that was their backup solution. So don't do things like that. But find experts to do it for you. Partner with experts to do the expert work for you rather than doing it yourself. So if you're learning to fly and you see the first thing as a landed plane like that, not properly an expert. You want to pick a big goal. You want to pick one thing that you want to do. One thing is, like we heard, make money. Other one might be, I want to make people very, very happy. I want to be better than Facebook. I want to be better than TechCrunch. I want to be something else. Pick a goal and then actually analyze what takes you there. Chunk it up into parts that you should deal with, which is, where do I get my funding from? Or how do I do my advertising? And not, how do I do my server? And where do I get my website from? These are things that have been solved. Others, that there are already services out there that you can use instead of reinventing them. We have a service-oriented environment in the Western world. It's all about services. If my toilet breaks down, I'm not likely to repair it myself because I don't want to flood the whole building. I call a plumber. If my web server goes down, I should have somebody that I can call to fix it for me rather than having to go there myself. You're in the shit in both cases. So hosting of your product should not be in one spot. That's the biggest mistake that people make. They build a server and put everything there. And then when the big load of users come, everything goes down. You have to separate your interface and the data that you provide or store. That's why, for example, when Twitter went down, most of the time I didn't realize it because the API was still up. I don't use the Twitter homepage. I use the Twitter through a client and just see it in my messages. So I didn't know that Twitter was down, but the website was down. And if you just keep everything in one web server, it's going to happen. That's a bad idea. Then pick specialized services and technologies for each of the stuff that you want to store. And there are so many out there. I mean, there's Amazon S3 and EC2, which is really cheap to use. It just pays for the traffic that you use. And EC2 is like virtual computers. You don't even have them. I mean, we have virtual computers. We have virtual hosting. We don't have any virtual users yet, but that will be probably the next thing. There's Google App Engine. We just released at iOS last month that they now have a business plan as well. If you want to use it for free now, you can use that. And later on, you can make money together with Google on it. Joyen is another provider. Microsoft Azure even has funding for you. So if you have a business plan, you send it to Microsoft. They give you all the hardware for free, and you're going to be their slave for the rest of your life. No, it's actually quite a nice product. If you don't get the base right, I like the rust-resistant bottom here with lots of rust things, you don't get a chance to look into the distance because you will always play catch-up. You will always be like, why is my server offline? What's going on here? Like, get the basics right, and then you can actually concentrate on making your system different. Twitter was only a success because it changed all the time. At the beginning, it was a microblogging platform. I write something, what I'm doing right now. Ooh, yeah, eating food, digesting food. getting rid of food, these kind of things. It became successful when people realized you can stalk celebrities with it. And then people wanted to talk to other people that celebrities just answered them. So people started as a messaging platform. And the platform changed and changed and changed because they came up with an API to build their data with rather than an interface. Data is your main product. It's quite funny that people think like a great website is the best product, but every one of us, even Yahoo, is dependent on news companies, on map providers, on people that give us information that we can then convert to something our users want. So make sure that your data is available in all other formats that you need, not only on your website. If somebody comes to you and say, like, can I use your data somehow? You have to say yes, and you have to have a way of doing that, rather than like scrape my website and try to find it. So if you make it easy for people to reach, store, and enrich your data, you have a good start. And this is every successful website out there that scaled perfectly and became successful did this. Flickr was only a data stream. Flickr was APIs that we built Flickr on. And then people started downloading like crazy from Flickr, and we wondered, like, okay, why don't we make it public? And out of a sudden, people built their own Flickr uploaders, people built things to convert photos with, and so on and so forth. And Flickr got out there. YouTube has 90% of their traffic from outside the website. It's people embedding the videos inside their blog, and I piggyback on their integrity, on their success of their blog, rather than hoping they come to my product. So if you have your data and it's portable and can go out there, then you've already won. Okay. Total separation of information and display is terribly important. So you don't actually only get the data as a graphic, but you get it as an XML format so I can convert it to something else. Very important thing. This allows you to offer information in a format that other people can innovate for you. I mean, this is what Twitter did as well. Twitter would not be as successful if I didn't have these AIR clients or chat clients that I can use Twitter in. If I could not have used Twitter on my mobile phone, it would not have been interesting for me because I'm always on the go. But as they had an API, it was possible for me. It also allows you to build in parallel and create a great experience for your end users. The other thing is we start with a great design and then we build the website and then we think about the data. If you think about the data, your backend guys can go nuts with that. Make it secure, make it scaling, while you have another 3 weeks to build your interface. If you start with the interface and the backend guys have to wait for it, you're just not using your developers right. So obvious things that will keep you from scaling. Maintaining your own technical infrastructure, terribly stupid idea because computers hate us and they break down every time we don't look at them. Building a monolithic product rather than a modular system, like don't think your product will be the end of it. Have a good base product and little things that you extend and move away because you will have to change your product all the time. People will want different use cases. And any lack of resources and manpower. You don't have enough developers, you don't have enough money, but that's actually not that much of a problem. It's easy to solve. Do not reinvent the wheel, but research what you can use and pick and mix it. Just look around the web. It's a sweet shop of services and data that you can put together to build new interfaces with. And one example is WinterOlympicsMedals.com. It's something I built in like 20 minutes because English people were annoyed that I like the Winter Olympics and they don't. Because they say, oh, we don't have any Winter Olympic medals. You do. And this is the interface. I put it live during the Winter Olympics, made me about 600 pounds over a few weeks with Google Ads. And I built it in 15 minutes, more or less, because I used data from somebody else. The Guardian released this data as an Excel sheet that you can use for free, all the Winter Olympics since 1926. Then I said, okay, how about I put it on Google Docs? Because Google servers can actually take my data load. I don't have to do that myself. So I put it on Google Docs. I said, publish it as a web page. I saved it as a CSV file outside to the world. And then I used Yahoo's YQL service, which is more or less turning the web into a database. So you can say, select what from where conditions and get the data back. So you can mix and match things from the web and get it back in a simple format. And that was the whole code I had to write for making the metal information from the Guardian searchable and then build an interface on it. So I don't host any of that stuff. I just basically use Google for one thing, Yahoo for another thing, and then I build the interface. For the interface, I use the developer Yahoo Developer Network Stencil Kit and the Design Patent Library. These are interfaces that we found in user testing what people think are the best things to do something. Like if you pick a date from a form, this date picker is the thing that most of our users loved. So you don't have to do that research, and you don't have to do a date picker that people don't like, because we already did that for you, and it's Creative Commons and free to use. Then I created the CSS layout with the CSS Grids Builder from YUI, because I don't want to think about that one either anymore. So you build your interface, you click a button, you get the HTML, and then I just put the rest of the code in. Done. A few years ago, this would have cost me like 6 hours of my life testing it in all the browsers. I know it's already tested for me. And then I basically use some of the YUI widgets. These are the widgets that we released, like the tab boxes and the trees and all that stuff. And this is Yahoo Mail rebuilt with all the free systems that we allow you to use. You can use them now. You can style them differently. You can give them other color. We had to tell people that this is not Yahoo Mail because they were complaining that they couldn't read their mail in that demo. And it's just because it looks the same way. It's the same interface. We throw out all the tools that we build our own website with because you make it better by finding solutions that we didn't think about. The top tip is use the web to build for the web. So instead of just maintaining everything in your own database, throw your data out there. Go to Zing, LinkedIn, Delicious, YouTube, Twitter, Upcoming, Google Maps, Flickr, and use all these systems and pull them in together into your system. Because you don't only have not the problem that you don't have to scale a server to convert 6,000 JPEGs like Flickr does for you, but you also get your content out there. If somebody in Flickr goes over a nice photo that is actually from your last office party, they hear about your company that way. They would not have gone to your website, but they go to Flickr every day and find you there. Same with YouTube, same with Delicious, LinkedIn, and so on and so forth. Don't build your own login system. The last thing that I want to tell people about technical stuff. Like, we have Facebook, we have Yahoo Connect, we have Google Connect. Every system out there is available for you for authentication. Why would you want to store people's passwords and actually go through the pains when they lose it? And when they really want to use the password called password or 12345. You don't want to have that problem anymore. And if 1.3 million, billion, la-la-la, Facebook users can use their Facebook login to go into your page without having to sign up again, that's a great thing to do. For extra speed and less resource burning, tweak the interface. And this is what the exceptional performance research we released is about. So there's even a tool that you can run over your website that gives you a grade from A to F, how good your website performs. And it tells you what can be fixed in case it's too slow. Which is great as well, because you don't have to do that research yourself. You can just make it faster. And don't fall into the personal trap. That's the other big problem that people do. We always hire a techie, and every startup has this like poster child techie guy, like, you know, the one in shorts rather than the guy with the suit. And churn of technical staff will slow down your product and cost you a lot of money. When your developers leave, trying to find a new developer is going to be a real problem. When all of a sudden you become much, much bigger and you need 10 more developers, you have to spend a lot of money unless you have a really cool name already. And people leave companies on average every 2 years nowadays. So make sure that when people that you hire, that they don't keep all the secrets to themselves, but they share with the rest of the company, because then they can go. So instead of relying on one wizard to do all the work, build a team. Make it a team structure. Like, I promote people by how much they share information with the other people that they work with, rather than like how godlike they are as developers. Because then they can get sick and they can leave and the product will still be around. You don't want to rely on one person to basically be your tech guy, to go-to guy, because, yeah, they're excited right now, but, I mean, like, in few years' time, they will find out that there's girls on this planet as well and do other things. It's also free PR for you, because happy techies talk to other techies and hire other techies. That's why companies like Yahoo and Google give you a lot of money for every person that you recommend, because, hey, hiring an agency is much more expensive than asking your own people and giving them £500 or whatever we get, I think a cookie and some sandwiches. And that's basically all, so thanks very much, and I'll be around tomorrow.